distasteful to us because it's so much getting in the way of what we really want. And therefore, we have to really want something also on the spiritual level. Otherwise, the material things that entangle us won't seem distasteful for us. So the heart is the sitting place of the conditioned soul's his plans. In the city, there are many, again, there are many very effulgent, snake-like plans within the heart, just waiting. They're effulgent because they give light to our life without the hope of some enjoyment. There is no impetus for life for a materialist. Just like Prabhupada tells a story that one of his godbrothers was in London at the beginning of the 20th century. Not at the very beginning, but in early 30s, late 20s, 1920s. And some lord or another, a great nobleman, asked godbrother of Prabhupada's disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, asked him if he could make him into a Brahmin. Lord somebody. Does anyone know which lord it was? Zetlin? Yes. And Prabhupada's godbrother said, yes. Well, what do I have to do? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. The reply, impossible. Because what's life? What's there in life? What's the use of being a Brahmin with no life? So they illumine one's life like these variable jewels that illumine the heart, but they're not actually valuable at all. They're just the opposite. They are the opposite because if one takes the jewel on the head of a serpent and tries to get it off, he will die of the bite of the serpent. So if we try to enjoy the jewel-like desires of our material, on the material level, we will also die. They will bite us and we will die. Again and again and again. Atta eva maya tari samsareta duk. Because indriyasya te raga dvesho vyavastita tayana vashamaga chetta yasya paripantanao. So in the city there were many assembly houses, street crossings, streets, restaurants, gambling houses, markets, resting places, flags, festoons. And beautiful parks. What are festoons? What is a festoon? It's the long things, the decorative cloths that have jewels and everything that go around something. Yes. Colorful, make something that is plain, it makes it look very festive. So, the palms and soles of the feet are compared to flags and festoons. On the outskirts of that city were many beautiful trees and creepers encircling a nice lake. Also, surrounding that lake were many groups of birds and bees that were always chanting and humming. So Prabhupada, in his purport, explains that these are all favorable for a materialist. These are all favorable situations. As soon as there is a peaceful, enjoyable, favorable place, a materialistic person will think of enjoying with the opposite sex. So Prabhupada, in his purport, speaks very strongly about he's in the frame of reference here, a brahmachari sannyasi prohibited to associate with women because as soon as there is association, especially in a secret place, one's mind, because the tendency to enjoy in the material world is so powerful. And for a woman, man and for a man or woman, these are the prime objects of enjoyment. This fixes one in the bodily concept of life. This fixes everyone as thinking oneself the enjoyer. So therefore, this is really to be strictly observed. One should not trust the good intentions because it is just too dangerous. So therefore, the last two lines, the sex impulse is so strong that even if one is very learned, he becomes agitated in such circumstances, alone with a member of the opposite sex. If this is the case, how can a young man in a nice park remain calm and quiet after seeing a beautiful young woman? Text 18. The branches of the trees standing on the bank of the lake receive particles of water carried by the spring air from the falls coming down from the icy mountains. If one sets up a pleasing atmosphere, then naturally, materially pleasing, then naturally one thinks of material enjoyment. And by thinking of material enjoyment and acting on that level, one becomes captivated by material existence. And if one becomes captivated by material existence, it appears very wonderful, but it means birth, death, old age, and disease, and a continuation of material existence. So it's so difficult in this age of Kali, and especially as Kali Yuga progresses, it's so difficult to be detached because the material world displays all types of enjoyment. It forces them into your vision continuously. Everyone's behavior is so loose. There's the advertising, and there's the movies, and then there's the this, and there's the that. Continuously, the music, tamagun, rajagun, continuously. So it's very, very, very difficult to keep a pure heart in Kali Yuga. So everyone should be very considerate of the sincerity of the other's attempt. Be very considerate of the needs of others. When does one not wish to be considerate of others? When one thinks that I am the center. So there one is in material consciousness, basically, even if in devotional garb, unless one is willing to be a servant of the servant of the servant, then one will find oneself in material consciousness. We don't want, as soon as we move from the position of being a servant, an internal mood of being the servant, we're already half lost internally. So if one needs a principle to run one's life by, it is this one. I consider myself a servant of my spiritual master and a servant of the servant of the servant, servant of all the Vaishnavas. That's sort of the one principle. And therefore a devotee, regardless of what his service is, this is the key of how he should think. What is my service now? How can I serve now? What is my service in this particular situation? Whether one has a big, big service or a little, little service, it's the same. And in fact, there is no consideration of big, big service, little, little service, because how can an insignificant soul do anything other than a little service? Of course, Krishna can. Just like once I was sitting with Prabhupada in Melbourne, and he had just woken up from his rest in the afternoon, and he had just gotten a letter that was disturbing him. He didn't say who it was from, but he didn't even say what the person, the content of the letter. He just read it. It was just three of us there, and he just read it and said, he just was talking about it even. He said, "My dear Prabhupada, I am most fallen, insignificant, useless, and I have a big problem." And he didn't even explain how foolish and ludicrous the statement was. He just said, "Just see." And then I had to think about it to figure out what did he mean. But he meant that how could someone who has fallen, tiny, insignificant, have a big problem? Someone who has fallen and tiny and insignificant can only have a tiny, insignificant problem. Only big, big people can have big, big problems. And then he said, "I wish I could train all my disciples personally, but what can I do?" That's what he said. So as soon as we think we have big, 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 big problems, we're already out of proper consciousness. Just imagine an ant walking by and you put your finger in front of him and he thinks, "Oh, this is heavy. Oh, I gotta sit down for a while. This is really a big, big problem, isn't it?" No, what are the ants? They just keep going somehow or another over or around this, that. So, there was the beautiful trees. They tried to arrange everything in the body for an enjoyable time. And then the branches of the trees standing on the bank of the lake receive particles of water carried by the spring air from the waterfalls coming down from the icy mountains. Perfect. In such an atmosphere, even the animals of the forest became non-violent and non-envious like great sages. Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone. Over and above, due to the satisfaction of the animals in that wonderful atmosphere, they would not attack. Over and above everything was the cooing of the cuckoos. What sound do the cuckoos make? Coo, coo, coo. Very regular. They make other sounds too. But that's one. Any passenger passing along that path was invited by that atmosphere to take rest in the nice garden. Such a sweet atmosphere. So Prabhupada will immediately ruin the illusion of how pleasing the atmosphere is by telling us the real situation of what it means. A peaceful family life with wife and children is compared to the peaceful atmosphere of the forest. Children are compared to nonviolent animals. Sometimes, however, wives and children are called swajanakya dasyu, burglars in the name of kinsmen. A man earns his livelihood with hard labor, but the result is that he is plundered by his wife and children exactly as a person in a forest is attacked by some thieves and burglars who take his money. I heard Prabhupada give a lecture on, and in the lecture he mentioned something like this. He said, it was so classic. He said, if you're walking down the street and someone puts their hand in your pocket and takes out all your money and walks away with it, then you'll immediately call the police. "Thief, thief." But if your wife does that, he says, you'll immediately think, "Oh, how cute, how nice it is." So Prabhupada was... clearly, but on other times, he spoke about householder life on a different level, certainly, That one should live in a very, very nice, peaceful way with Krishna in the center, certainly. And on that level, he didn't mock and make fun of the wives or the children or the householders and things like that. He didn't make fun of it at all. But so on one level, if someone is married and if one is going to use his life in that way to serve Krishna, it's extremely serious to do it in a proper way and not in a condemning way, so that one can advance. And we'll hear of a counterexample to this in the fifth canto, in the first chapter, with Priyavrata Maharaj. But when talking about breaking one's attachments to the material world and being attached to things, to temporary and false shelters, then these things are strongly criticized. And of course, if one can avoid it, that's ideal, because one's life is simpler in that way. And ultimately, of course, this is the part and parcel of the bodily concept of life. So sometimes the Bhagavatam will speak of ultimates on the ultimate level, and certain things will be condemned. And then sometimes the Bhagavatam will speak on a different level of using the material situation to advance in Krishna service, knowing that everyone isn't on the Paramahamsa level. And then the same thing that is condemned in one place will be glorified in another place. So everything has to be understood in its context. But ultimately, of course, there is no shelter, ultimate shelter, in anything of the material world. The ultimate shelter is only where, as Sanat Kumar said, at the lotus feet of Krishna. So Paranjana came across this wonderful city in Bharatvarsh. And while wandering here and there in that wonderful garden, he was in the most pleasing place of the city, in that garden that made everyone wish to enjoy, stop a while and enjoy. So there, King Paranjana suddenly came in contact with a very beautiful woman who was walking there without any engagement. She had 10 servants with her, and each servant had hundreds of wives accompanying him. The woman was protected on all sides by a 5-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. Prabhupada's purport. The vital force of a living entity includes the 5 kind of air working within the body, so that's which are known as prana, apana, vyana, saman, and udan. So in Ayurveda, so much of the Ayurvedic principles are meant to balance the different airs of the body, the upward moving airs, the downward moving airs, and that, because they very powerfully make the body function. And a imbalance of the life airs causes mental imbalance, causes physical imbalance, the body doesn't disease, etc. The airs out of the kapha, pitta, and vayu. The vayu, or the air, is considered the most powerful because it has the ability to move the others. So, and when one gets older, as we'll hear in the Paranjana story, one's prana, or the life air, the ability, the strength, it just becomes diminished and diminished, and then one feels tired all the time, and I don't have the energy to do what I used to do, etc. So the vital force is compared to a serpent, because a serpent can live simply by drinking air. So one should conserve his vital force just to use it for the proper reason, and which is in human life to develop one's Krishna consciousness, to become a lover of Krishna, not a lover of the material world, or one who is entangled in the material world. A lover of Krishna, a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Gopi Bharta Parakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nadas. The vital force carried by the air is described as pratihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. The woman, who represents intelligence, was searching after a husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. So intelligence is another one of the material coverings over consciousness, over the pure consciousness of the soul. And is in the third canto we heard that there are four subtle senses that were part of the Mahatattva, and does anyone remember what they are? And there's actually one element, but it is known differently by its four different functions. So it is Chitta, Ahankar, mind, and intelligence, Buddhi, Mana. There's one function, one substance actually is described there, which is often we'll call chitta, but when it's acting in a particular way, it is called intelligence. When it's acting in another way, it's called false ego. Another way, mind. Or consciousness, chitta. A beautiful woman is useless, Prabhupada says, unless protected by the proper husband. Intelligence must always be very fresh. Therefore, the word apraudam, very young, is used here. Material enjoyment means utilizing the intelligence. So the soul is there, the intelligence is there, and the intelligence on the material level is meant to plan and scheme how to get the senses to enjoy their sense objects of rupa, rasa, gandha, sabda, and sparsha. Form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. So for a while, the romance of their meeting, so sweet, so wonderful. The beautiful, powerful, heroic king meets the beautiful, intelligent, qualified princess, and they live in their city. But there is no story in the material world that has a happy ending. Actually, except in Hindi movies, they all have happy endings. Which is much better than every Western movie gets a miserable ending. Not all. But in the material world, every story ends with the death of the hero and the heroine. There's that in the Krishna book, and probably in the Puranas, it describes how one king, Raivata, he had a beautiful, wonderful, qualified wife named Revati, and he wanted to find a proper husband. So he went to Lord Brahma to find a proper husband, and he was there for some time, and then he came back, or even by the time he asked Brahma, every generation, not only his friends had died already, and his relatives, and anyone he knew, they had already died. But not only that, so many generations had passed that no one, even the remembrance of anyone was completely gone as well. So us insignificant souls with a big problem, huge problems, will remain in this world, in 100 years from now, out of the 6 billion living entities who happen to be alive in this world at this moment, excuse me, not living entities, humans, How many of those do you think still will be alive? From the one who was just born right this second? There's probably a birth somewhere in the world just now. Including that person, in 100 years, how many people do you think will be alive that are alive now? And in 1,000 years, how many people will remember even the name of anyone who's alive now? Just like we know from history, there's a few people, maybe we remember 100 names or 200 names, many from our local place, who did this and did that, and he built this bridge and this happened. But in 1,000 years, what to speak of 10,000 years, there's not even going to be a remnant left in anyone's mind about anyone. And yet we have such big problems. There are no happy endings. There are no significant material stories either. No one can, in fact, accomplish anything of significance in the material world. They're tiny. So the tiny soul does something significant when he places himself at the lotus feet of the supremely significant. And this is what Sanat Kumar was telling Prithu Maharaj. You will cross over this ocean of ignorance by boarding the lotus feet of the Lord. And just by doing that, the ocean will shrink. Just by doing that, you don't have to travel across. You are already across. Because the ocean shrinks to Vatsapadam, the size of the water held in a calf's footprint. So this is the jnan applied to the material world. It is not pleasant. Now we're talking about it in somewhat of a theoretical way, and it can make you feel uncomfortable. But when you think of it in terms of the people you have a relationship with, your friends, your family members, wife, children, it's quite uncomfortable. But yet, this is one of the facts of life. So either if we don't live life with all the facts in it, then we're bound to lose completely. We can't disregard facts just because we don't like them and they're unpleasant. Or we can, but that's compared to the rabbit who's being chased by the fox, and their defense mechanism is to stop and close their eyes and go like this. Which means that they're dead. Better acknowledge the hard, cruel facts of material life. Because the nature of reality, even material reality, the definition of reality is it's undeniable. It's real. So it's undeniable. So if you try to make believe that something that's undeniable doesn't exist, it's just foolish, because it's just like, yes, one has to be very conscious of practical. One cannot challenge, even devotees, says in the Bhagavad Gita, one should not challenge reality, the material laws of nature. One should not challenge the material laws of nature. So, but still, here comes the fairy tale sweetness. The woman's nose, teeth, and forehead were all very beautiful. Her ears were equally very beautiful and were bedecked with dazzling earrings. The waist and hips of the woman were very beautiful. She was dressed in a yellow sari with a golden belt, and while she walked, her ankle bells rang. She appeared exactly like a denizen of heaven. With the ends of her sari, the woman was trying to cover her breasts, which were equally round and well placed side by side. Immediately, Paranjana, seeing her, the enjoying spirit blossoms, overwhelms the consciousness. She again and again tried to cover them out of shyness while she walked exactly like a great elephant. And Prabhupada's purport explains that her breasts represent attachment and envy, and there is no distinction, difference between the two. Attachment, if there is material attachment, there must be envy. A very heavy statement. We try to get rid of our envy, but we cannot unless we get rid of our material attachment. Because as soon as one is attached materially, one will see someone who has something that we don't have. And immediately jealousy, envy. Now here is what Prabhupada says. We'll read in the last paragraph in the purport to 24. The word Niguhatim, trying to cover, indicates that even if one is tainted by Kama Lobha Krodha, they can be transfigured for Krishna consciousness. In other words, one can utilize Kama, lust, for serving Krishna. Being impelled by lust, an ordinary worker will work hard day and night. Similarly, a devotee can work hard day and night to satisfy Krishna. Just as karmis are working hard to satisfy kama krodha, a devotee should work in the same way, work hard to satisfy Krishna. Similarly, krodha, anger, can be used in the service of Krishna when it is applied to the non-devotee demons. Hanumanji applied his anger in this way. He was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra and he utilized his anger to set fire to the kingdom of Ravana, a non-devotee demon. Thus, kam, lust, can be utilized to satisfy Krishna, and krodha, anger, can be utilized to punish the demons. When both are used for Krishna's service, they lose their material significance, they lose their material significance, and become spiritually important. I would like to read what Narottama Das Thakur says about this. This is from Prem Bhakti Chandrika. Song 2. I'll just read this section. The section relevant to this specific point. See the devotees of Lord Krishna. Associate with the devotees of Lord Krishna. Faithfully engage in the ninefold process of devotional service, which includes hearing about the Lord, chanting His glories, worshipping Him, offering obeisances to Him, and remembering Him. Following these activities enlightens the devotees with spiritual knowledge. I shall use these senses to serve Lord Govinda, and I shall decline to worship the various demigods and demigoddesses. I shall only speak about pure devotional service. The numberless different philosophies and conceptions of life are all products of the conditioned soul's pride. The numberless different philosophies and conceptions of life are all products of the conditioned soul's pride. Trying to understand them brings no benefit, but only a pain within the mind. The insubordinate senses are like enemies that live within the body. Tell the ear to hear, and it may rebel. Be careful. They go. Tell the mind to understand a particular point or to become firm in a certain way, and it may very well disobey. I shall fight with lust, anger, bewilderment, greed, madness, envy, and pride. Defeating them, I will become blissful at heart, and I will easily become able to worship Lord Govinda. Now, how to fight with lust, anger, etc., as Prabhupada was saying, Narottama Das Thakur says, lest I will engage in offering the fruit of my work to Lord Krishna, just as Prabhupada said. Kama Krishna Kamarpanam. Anger I will direct towards the enemies of the devotees, just as Prabhupada said. Greed I will engage by being greedy to hear the topics of Lord Hari in the association of saintly devotees. Bewilderment will be manifested because I cannot immediately attain my worshipable Lord. Madness will be there when I madly glorify the transcendental attributes of Lord Krishna. In this way, I will engage each of these in the service of Lord Krishna. If lust is not controlled, then it becomes the breeding ground for a host of vices, and it checks one's advancement on the path of devotional service. However, if one stays in the association of saintly devotees, then that association will carry him beyond the influence of lust, anger, and their friends. I shall not become angry. I shall renounce anger. I shall become free from my six enemies, such as greed and bewilderment. I shall control my mind, and I shall always remember Lord Krishna Chandra. When lust and his friends hear the word Govinda, they immediately begin to flee as a herd of elephant flees when it hears a lion's roar. If one engages in single-pointed devotional service to Lord Krishna, then the worshipper attains transcendental bliss and all kinds of calamities flee from him. Don't sin. Take no interest in profit, adoration, and distinction, labha, puja, pratishta. Instead, meditate on the lotus feet of Lord Govinda. In this way, all sufferings will go far away, and transcendental bliss and pure love for Lord Krishna will spontaneously come. Give up the association of the impious non-devotees. Give up the tendency to find fault in others. Don't follow any spiritual path other than devotional service. Don't worship any demigod. If one takes to the worship of the demigods, he becomes deviated from the path of devotional service. Oh, brothers, please become attached to your worshipable Lord alone. Serve him without deviation and sing the glories of his pastimes. I will now quote the words of Hanuman, who demonstrates this exclusive devotion to one's worshipable deity. Hanuman said, although he is not different from my Lord Narayan, lotus-eyed Lord Ram alone is the be-all and end-all of my life. If one attains the planets of the pittas and demigods and enjoys celestial happiness there, then I congratulate him, saying, well done, well done. However, I myself would never strive to attain such a thing. For myself, I am content simply to worship the divine couple and swim and float in the bliss of pure love for them. This pure love is the most valuable object in the three worlds. Although I have taken great trouble to try to enjoy the miserable sense gratification available in this world, I shall now give it up. I shall now reside in Braja. Serve Lord Govinda, hear and chant the topics of Lord Krishna, chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, and at every moment relish the transcendental mellows of devotional service in the association of the residents of Braja. I shall always aspire to serve the Lord, and great faith in the Lord will become manifest in my mind. In this way, I shall remain always fearless in all situations. Narottama Das says, somehow or other have accepted the role of a non-devotee. O my master, O great soul, Please deliver me. It's also interesting to see how Narottama Das deals with the question of where the jiva came from. Somehow or other, which is basically what Mahaprabhu said, Ayi nanda tunujakinkaram. Somehow or another I've come into this material world. Please deliver me. Yes. Padinu boli. Narottama says, Padinu asat boli. Paritraina kara. Please, just deliver me. We'll read a little bit more. So Paranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Paranjana, who, though a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. My dear lotus-eyed, kindly explain to me where you're coming from and who you are and whose daughter you are. You appear very chaste. What is the purpose of your coming here? What are you trying to do? Please explain all these things to me. We'll read from the beginning of Prabhupada's purport. The first aphorism in the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. In the human form of life, one should put many questions to himself and to his intelligence. In the various forms of life lower than human life, the intelligence does not go beyond the range of life's primary necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Dogs, cats, and tigers are always busy trying to find something to eat or a place to sleep, trying to defend and to have sexual intercourse successfully. In the human form of life, however, one should be intelligent enough to ask what he is, why he has come into the world, what his duty is, who is the supreme controller, what is the difference between dull matter and the living entity, etc. There are so many questions, and the person who is actually intelligent should simply inquire about the supreme source of everything, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. So one should use one's intelligence to inquire about the self. My dear lotus-eyed, he continued, who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you? And who are those 10 specific servants? Who are those women following the 10 servants? And who is the snake that is preceding you? So later she'll answer all this to the best of her ability. But the answer is the 11 bodyguards are the mind and the 10 senses. The vital force is the snake. Hundreds of women is desires, and they all add up to anxiety. All desires, the manifold material desires that sit in our heart, they ultimately just mean anxiety and attachment and envy. My dear beautiful girl, you're exactly like the goddess of fortune or the wife of Lord Shiva or the goddess of learning, the wife of Lord Brahma. Although you must be one of them, I see that you are loitering in this forest. Indeed, you are as silent as a great sage. Is it that you are searching after your own husband? Whoever your husband may be, simply by understanding that you are so faithful to him, he will come to possess all opulence. I think you must be the goddess of fortune, but I do not see the lotus flower in your hand. Therefore, I'm asking you where you have thrown that lotus. So in a very, very sweet, seductive way, he's speaking sweet words to her to try to attract her to him because he's already attracted to her. So that is the situation of the material world. The soul is desiring and he presents his plans to his intelligence. And then the intelligence has them accepted by the mind, and then the senses execute the plans. Two more verses. O greatly fortunate one, it appears that you are none of the women I have mentioned, because I see your feet are touching the ground. But if you are some woman of this planet, you can, like the goddess of fortune, who accompanied by Lord Vishnu, increases the beauty of the Vaikuntha planets, also increase the beauty of this city by associating with me. You should understand that I am a great hero and a very powerful king on this planet. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. The word bhuvi sprik mentioned in this verse is very significant. When the demigods sometimes come to this planet, they do not touch the ground. Paranjana could understand that the girl did not belong to the transcendental world or the higher planetary system because her feet were touching the ground. Since every woman in the world wants her husband to be very influential, rich, and powerful, Paranjana, to seduce the girl, introduced himself to be such a personality. In the material world, whether one be a man or a woman, one wants to enjoy. A man wants to enjoy a beautiful woman, and a woman wants to enjoy a powerful, opulent man. Every living entity who possesses such material desires is called Purusha, enjoyer. Superficially, it appears that the woman is the enjoyed and the man is the enjoyer, but internally, everyone is an enjoyer. Consequently, everything in this material world is called Maya. So Maya's business is to create the illusion that we can somehow or another enjoy. And to enjoy, you need to be able to control. So Ishwaraham, aham bhogi. I control and therefore I enjoy. Demonic mentality. Final text and a little bit of Prabhupada's purport. Certainly your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful, I ask you to be merciful upon me. The last two sentences of Prabhupada's purport. Conditional life means being under the control of a woman, and certainly the living entity is always at the mercy of a woman or a man. Everyone tries to be the Lord, the Master, the Controller, the Enjoyer, but everyone simply ends up being exploited and controlled on the material level, in the material world. Thus, living entities live in bondage to one another, and thus they continue this conditional material life, illusion by Maya. So this is on one side. Again, Sanat Kumar said this bodily concept of life, which is based on the desire to be, to enjoy, bhunte prakriti janiha, one has to become detached from it. So this medicine is harsh. It is bitter medicine. It is uncomfortable medicine. It is a mirror. And it points out materialistic tendencies that we may have. We don't want to cultivate that. We want to cultivate, rather than being attached to that, we want to cultivate an attachment to beautiful Krishna. And that's why we're here. To develop our attachment to Krishna. So from my reading of the Bhagavatam, again, this is one of the real detachment awarders. It awards detachment, this part of the Bhagavatam. And the best is yet to come. Okay, thank you very much. Yes.
Please apologize first if I got this wrong, but you said whatever we use to get out of Maya is the very thing that Maya will use to keep us in trap.
Maya will use, try to use everything that we use to get out.
Can you elaborate on that, please?
You want to do some service, and that will get you out of the material world because you're serving Krishna. And Maya will make you proud of your service and think that you're better than the devotees who are doing little service and I'm doing big service. So the thing, the service that you're trying to offer to Krishna in the mood of this is my devotional offering, Maya will try to use that very same thing to entangle you within the material world. You become similar, so many parallel examples. You want to be a, you do something successfully, you work hard sincerely, and you're successful at it. And then pride comes to the heart. And then Krishna so kindly teaches us humility by, or we start getting some influence and Krishna allows us to do something. We start, how come people don't recognize me, how great I am? So many, a million different ways, but it has the same basic formula. Even, So correspondingly, as much as we find Krishna allows us to go up, seemingly up, awards us success, every inch that we go up, or millimeter we go up, we better go down that amount in humility. Otherwise, it's just a matter of time before we topple. And regardless, because Maya is so powerful that even I may be doing this service and I may not... Yeah, I've also had the personal experience and that I'd be sweeping the floor or something and I'm working out a system and I'm thinking I'm actually sweeping much better than anyone else can sweep and I should teach a course in it very soon or something like that. I'll, you know, work out a system, figure out how to teach it. It's amazing how Maya can make us proud of anything. Completely insignificant. And we'll figure out a way to become proud of it by the blessing of Maya.
He's
speaking not from the allegorical point of view because it has its story point of view and there's truth in the story point of view too. The truth in the story point of view is natural attraction between a man and a woman and a man. So he preaches on both levels. And sometimes it becomes confusing in that way.
And the second question, the life air, here is life air and the ten senses.
Yes.
What is life air compared in relation to consciousness? Is it the same?
Life, it's the consciousness that sits on that. And the, as far as I understand, the life force, the prana, you know, energy. So the energy isn't the consciousness, but without the energy, the consciousness has no ability to move the body. So it's, I don't have a very deep understanding of, but prana seems to go with the soul. It's not, it doesn't dissipate. No, it's not. Life force is something different. It's material. It's used, it's that energy that moves the body. You know, you see people, young people, they have so much prana. So much prana. And you find old people, those people were blessed with lots of prana, and it's passion too, because it's energy. Life force. It seems to fit in the air.
Air?
Air, but it seems like there are many varieties of air. Air just doesn't mean the stuff that the fan is moving around. Huh? Subtle. Yes, you need a vaidya.
I want to just make sure it's not consciousness.
No. No. But when you practice Astanga Yoga, by moving the life air, you move the soul upward. So it seems like there's an intimate relationship between the soul and the life air. Because if you notice that when you ever read about Astanga Yoga in the Bhagavatam, it speaks about moving the life air upward. So it seems like the soul sits on it somehow. Any yogis in the house?
Can if vocals can be used in Krishna consciousness
if
of all qualities, like your qualities, so how to apply MD in Krishna consciousness?
Not. You can't. In one way, you can. Why should people who are so selfish and so cruel have so much power in this world? You can become envious of their power in Krishna's, for Krishna in that sense. In that sense. But one has to be careful in dealing with these qualities because they're very heavy. That's how I would say. What, like Prabhupada, he would go to different places sometimes. He'd be traveling. There's a huge building in New York where there's a Christian group called the Jehovah's Witnesses. They're all over. They have this huge building in Brooklyn, and they use that to print their magazine. And Prabhupada noticed that, and he wanted one like it for printing his books, something like that. I also saw Prabhupada, he would always criticize the scientists. They had so much prominence, they've created this, created that, and he would give them no credit at all. Really, what they have done, what contribution they have made. Usually that was his mood. I would say that's a type of, when you're in that mood, if you're not giving someone credit, like Prabhupada gave the example of envy, like some man was saying, there was a man who was envious of a person. And another person was saying about him, oh, he's become a high court judge. And the envious person said, well, even if it's true, he's probably not getting paid at all. So whatever even if he's accomplished something, you minimize it. That's envy. So Prabhupada, you could say, was minimizing and envious of the scientists. But I also heard in one morning walk when one of his disciples, yeah, the scientists, Prabhupada was consciously doing it for a particular purpose. Because we all tend to be enamored. Think, oh, they're so wonderful. Technology, computers, we're making so much advancement. Because we tend to be enamored by that. So he was very consciously and pointedly criticizing. But when one disciple, just without any consciousness, said, oh, the scientists, Prabhupada said, no. We should give them credit for what they've done. But why do they have to say there is no God? So at the root of Prabhupada's criticism and envy was the fact that Krishna is giving them so much intelligence, and they're using that to deny his existence. So let their intelligence, not give them any credit for their intelligence if they're not giving any credit to Krishna who gave them their intelligence. So I would say those are the kind of ways that it can be used. But again, with all these, utility is the principal thing. There has to be purity being the force, otherwise we will misuse them. And use anything as an excuse just to do what we want. Envy wishes harm for another. So on the material level, Prabhupada wished his foot, his shoe, on the face of the scientists. I kicked them in their face with boot. Stuff like that, he would say, on the material level. But spiritually, they should study hard, but not hardly study. Because there's a tendency, because there's a funny parallel between ignorance and goodness. Goodness is inactive because it's self-satisfied. Ignorance is inactive. So using, but not for the same reason. It's because of dullness. So there's a tendency to use goodness as a excuse for laziness. So a general principle is if people have energy, so they should work hard for Krishna. We should, because you want to make some offering for Krishna. But according to one's nature, that hard work should be different. But in the beginning, it seems to me, especially when one's young, then one has to use that youthful energy, otherwise the mind becomes overactive and gives us trouble. But later on, then work more according to your nature. But not be lazy, that's the point in that. Not be lazy. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? If you say a little slower, then I'll repeat it in the microphone so others can hear. So in text 20, there's a comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
And Sridhaswami.
And Sridhaswami, yes.
So Sridhaswami says that the word yadrichaya utam.
The words yadrichaya utam
shows.
Is it gattam or utam?
Agatam.
It is extremely difficult to explain the union between these two. Between which two?
The soul and the material consciousness.
Yes, I've always thought that. It's actually inconceivable.
Very difficult to explain.
Dune rupyatam, something like that. Very difficult to explain.
Vishwanath
says.
Shows or without the cause.
Yes. So Vishwanath says that the first union between these two is a haitukam, has no cause. Nirhetu has no cause. And there we are trying to... the cause is this. No, the cause is that. Huh?
Somehow
or another. Material consciousness. Because oil and water don't mix. How do matter and spirit mix? So that the first subtle covering. Wonderful. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.